My name is Rabbi David Pardo, and this is Mishnah Taharo. Today we find ourselves in chapter number 3, Mishnah number 8. We're in the middle of a topic regarding matters of uncertainty. We don't know exactly what the story is, and specifically Mishnah 8 is continuing the more limited theme of people of uncertainty, where we have people who we can't really ask what happened to them, whether they're Tamei Tahor, so we can make sure. We have to make certain assumptions. How do we make those assumptions? So here we have a case. Tinok shenimsa b'tzad ha'isa uva v'habatzak be'edo. So you find your kid next to the dough. He's hanging out in the kitchen, and there's like a big thing of dough. Unlike, by the way, the kid in Mishnah 7 who we assumed is tahor, this kid we assumed is tameh. This kid was otherwise tameh, and now he's hanging out next to your dough in the kitchen. The dough was tahor. And this kid has some dough in his hands. So the question is, just like the same thing with the lilies, did the kid dig into the dough, take some out, and in the interim he made all the other dough tameh as well? Or maybe some other friendly mom came along, dug some dough out so he could play with something and handed it to him, and therefore we could consider the rest of the dough tahor. Which is it? So we have a machlokas. Rabbi Meir mitahir. So Rabbi Meir is mitahir. The chachamim mitmeim. And the chachamim render all of the dough tameh. Shederech hatinok le tapeach, because it is the way of kids to slap the dough. That's definitely true. But what exactly is there? Anyone who has a kid can tell you. But what exactly is their machlokas about? So Rabbi Meir, what we have in play here is not exactly an equal case. We have something called the chazaka versus a rove, right? On the one hand, we could talk about the dough. We could say that before I turned around, before I was looking the other way, the dough was tahor and the kid was tameh. But more importantly, the dough was tahor. The dough was tahor. Can I consider it to be tahor now? So the chazaka of the dough is that it's tahor, and usually I like to stick with chazakas unless I have a good reason to think otherwise. On the other hand, I have a rove, and the rove is that kids like to slap dough. That's a rove. I can count on my kid that he probably did that. That's right. So now we have two things in play. Excuse me. We have the chazak and the rove. So Rabbi Meir is well known in Shas that he is chayish lemeute. Rabbi Meir is always worried about the minor case, about the unlikely case, and he factors it into his halachic decision making. So Rabbi Meir says the following. So on the one hand, I have a rove. On the other hand, I have a chazaka, and I have a miut. I have the chazaka, the status quo, and I also have a miut. I have the unlikely, but still halachically relevant possibility that my kid kept his hands to himself and some other helpful adult handed him the dough. So since I have a miut and a chazaka, I can consider that outweighing the rove, and I can go that way. As for chamim don't really care about the miut. They ignore the miut, so then I'm left with a rove and a chazaka beats a rove. A rove beats a chazaka. The kid, there's no way he was able to keep his hands to himself. He probably slapped the dough. The dough is probably tameh. And the fact that the dough has a chazaka, that it's tameh, bows before the koach of the rove, the likelihood that he probably slapped the dough. What happened to our principal? We loved our principal so much that kol she'im bo da'at li sha'al seiko tahor. So the Rambam really explains this much better, that we only apply this principle when all other things are equal. When all of our assumptions, bein latuma, bein latahara, equal each other out, then I can employ this principle and I can say that when I don't know, if I could postulate either way, I'm empowered by this principle to assume the path of tahara. And that's exactly what Rabbi Meir is doing, by the way. Rabbi Meir thinks palga palga. He thinks that all things are equal, because on the one hand I have the rove, but on the other hand it's not just the chazaka, because God knows that a rov beats a chazak, but I have a chazaka and a miut. So palga palga, Rabbi Meir wants to employ this principle. Chachamim do not think all things are equal. Chachamim say there is no way that the kid didn't slap the dough, and there's no room for this principle. The principle only comes into play when everything is equal, when all things are 50-50. Batzeh, going right along, batzeh sheish bo nekirat tarnegolim. Ooh, mashkin t'me'in b'toch ha'bayit. So here, you have the dough is now on the floor. And the dough is not only on the floor, it has like chicken pecks in it. So the chickens were digging through the dough. And that's in the one corner. In the other corner, you have water. And this water isn't any kind of water, it is tame water. So here I have a case where the chickens are tahor, otherwise. Chicken definitely pecked in the dough, and probably also drank the water. So what do I do? Do I assume that the chicken's beak was covered in tame water, and if that's the case, it was covered in tame water, then probably made all the dough tame also? Or do I assume that didn't happen? I don't know. Imesh bein mashkin l'kikarot kedei sheyan gevu et pihem ba'aretz, harei elu tehorin. So it depends how much space there is. If there's enough space between the water and the dough for the chicken to peck the floor, dry its mouth off somehow, and any farm person would know exactly what amount of space that is, so then I can consider them tahor. Again, as long as there's the space, then I can employ the uncertainty principle, uncertainty impurity principle. I've set up a scenario where it could be 50-50. I can assume that it's tahor. But I have to have enough space in order to, because they're right next to each other, that I can't make these assumptions. And it's obvious that the chicken went from the water and back to the dough and so forth. Next example, uvafara uvakelev, so a cow or a dog. So kedei she, how much space do I need? Kedei she lachachu ed leshanam. Enough, same story but a different measure, enough for them to lick their tongues. Now, I am a city boy and I've never had a dog and certainly never had a cow, but that sounds very mysterious to me. Licking their own tongues, but someone will explain it to me. At any rate, it's pretty much the same thing. I just a longer measure. It's got to be more space to lick their own tongues. Same idea. Ushar kol behima kedei she tinagev. All the other animals, whatever space it is for their mouths or beaks or whatnot to dry off. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov metaher bekelev. So Rabbi Eliezer says that everything you said is true except for dogs. Dogs are different. Dogs don't need any space. Why? Shehu pikeach, because dogs are clever. Not clever enough to ask them questions, by the way, but clever enough. Shein dar kol aniach et hamazon ve'lech hamayim. They are clever enough to know that when the food is out, you go for the food. They know where their bread is buttered, so to speak. And if they see some food, they're going to eat the food because they know that the food is going to go, but the water is going to stay. And so no dog is stupid enough to go back and forth from the water to the food. They're just going to stick to the food. That is the end of chapter 3. I hope you enjoyed. On to chapter 4, turning the page. Chapter 4, first Mishnah. So now we're continuing the theme of certainty and uncertainty, but we're moving it into live motion. Hazarek tuma mimakom lemakom. So let's say you throw tuma from one place to another place. Example, kikar levin hamaftachot. So imagine you have a field of loaves of bread. Well, not like a whole field, but they're scattered across the floor, and you throw a key in that direction, and the loaves are tamei, and the key is tahor. I want to know what happened to the key. Or maftech levin hakikarot, or maybe the key is the one that's tameh, and the loaves are tahor, so I want to know what's the status of the kikars, of the loaves. Tahor. Everything is tahor. Everything's tahor because something is, mutter, because moving objects cannot be asked questions. Zorek kemisha ein bodat lishael dami. Anything that's thrown, you can't really ask questions of it. It's, I suppose, too uncertain. And we can assume that they are tahor. Rabbi Huda differs. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Kikar levein hamaftechot tameh, mafteach levein kikarot tahor." If the case is that the let's stick with, kikar levein hamaftechot. So the kikar is tameh, and the mafteach is no. The kikar is tameh, and the mafteach is tahor. Meaning the bread that's on the floor is tameh, and the mafteach is. The kikar that's on the floor is tameh, and the mafteach itself is tahor. So we're throwing a tahor key into a field of tameh loaves. Then I have to assume that I switched the example. No, I'll just continue the way I was going to say. So then it's tahor, because. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that we only really care about the thing that's in motion, right? Whereas opposed to Tanakhama says, as long as there's motion, then I have to assume everything is tahor. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's not true for the loaves. If the loaves are tahor, then the thing in motion is tameh, then I can assume tahor. But if the loaves are tameh, then I can't employ this silly zorek kemisha ein bo dat lisha el dami principle. I can't assume that that everything is tahor because it's in motion, because the thing that's in motion is tahor. What I'm really worried about is the loaves on the floor, which are tameh. So if the thing that's stationary is tameh, then I don't get this principle. But if the thing that's in motion is tameh, then I can employ this principle. As opposed to Tanakamu, who says that as long as something's in motion, then I can assume that it is tahor. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. And hey, watch where you're throwing that.